Hi guys, I'm Becca Otis from Five Lines Pottery, and I'm located in Van.
And I'm Ryan Durbin from RD Ceramics, located in Highland Heights, Kentucky.
And welcome to Wheel Talk. Okay.
All right, we're started.
We're live.
I would have regretted that if I wouldn't have tested it.
Why would you have regretted it? It would have been fine.
Because something would have been wrong and I would have been like, shit.
Whatever. Okay, hello. We're live, but we're talking about the Macy's Day balloons. And we figured we should start while we're talking about that because it's interesting. So we just watched a video of the Barney the Barney balloon ripping in half in 1997. And Ryan was like, what are those even made out of? And I was like, helium.
What is the parade? Like, I've never actually watched the parade.
You fucking monster. You've
never... I hate parades. Parades are so boring.
But this parade has the fucking Rockettes in it.
Who cares? Who is that? Is that a musical group? Is that a dancing group?
Yes!
Okay, who gives a shit? Go on.
Clearly, I do. Anyway, I grew up watching the Macy's Day Parade, and I grew up, like, literally waking
up at the crack of dawn. Would be funnier? Rockettes. It would be a bunch of people that look like Dwayne Johnson, but it's a bunch of women, and they're just parading down the street with, like, different attires of the Rock. So, like, some of them have the big, heavy metal chains around their neck. With the cut-off shirts, some of them are dressed as different Rock characters. Some of them are dressed as the Rock when he was in WWE kicking ass. Like, that's what I want to see as the Rockettes.
What's funny is that, like, when you started saying that, I was like, what does that even have to do with the Rockettes? And then in my mind, I was like, oh, wait. Rock. The Rock.
Yes. All right, continue.
Anyway, that's never happening. Anyway, Thanksgiving Day Parade. I used to get up at the butt crack of dawn to watch the Thanksgiving Day Parade because I grew up on the Pacific, in the Pacific Northwest for the most part, and then went to Colorado after that. And so you have to watch it with, and they start at like fucking 8 a.m. in New York.
How long does it last?
It lasts for like an hour and a half.
Do they, is it like a specific parade path? And it's like, it just seems like a glorified advertisement to me. Like, what is it?
No, it's not a glorified advertisement. I mean, Macy's is going downhill anyway. So it's not even about Macy's. Okay, the thing about it is that they've obviously sponsored it for years.
How much money are they sinking into the main promoter of this parade?
No, they're just required to do it at this point. Like, they're just required.
Yeah, they just come up for renewal and they're like, "All right, board, how much do we have to fork over this year for the parade?"
Right.
All right. And billions. We're doing it.
They have balloons, and then they also have floats, and then they have Santa at the end of the parade. But also they have different bands, like tons of marching bands from around the country. They like do competitions to get into the Macy's Day Parade, and like obviously the Rockettes. They have almost all the Broadway shows that are relevant. They come out and do a dancing singing sequence. And so the thing about it that's really cool is that they all stop right in front of the Macy's on Fifth Avenue. And they do their little sequencing. They, like, walk in the parade. Well, the Rockettes don't walk in the parade because they're royalty. But, like...
They're royalty, so they just glide. They're, like, walking on water out there.
You don't know who the Rockettes are, right?
No.
Okay, well, the Rockettes are the ones that kick their legs really high in the air together. And they have, like, 50 of them, and they all kick their legs in the air. It's like
their
can-can.
So their arms, arms are kind of horizontally out together.
Yes.
I kind of know, like, what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's like the can-can, but not suggestive. And, like, it's got a pretty gnarly past, which we won't mention, but
dang. So they're just high stepping all the way down the street, like
that. I literally just said that they don't walk in the parade. They
but they I just, thought you just said something about them. What do they do then?
They just show up in front of the Macy's Day thing, and then they do a little dance, and then they leave.
Okay.
And then, and then there's all these balloons, and then there's some balloons that have been there since like the fucking 50s, and then there's some balloons that are like brand new, and they have like 50 fucking people that hold down these balloons.
And, I mean, how expensive are these balloons? Like, that's pretty elaborate.
Dude, they're
elaborate.
Fucking expensive. Here,
does it say? Are you looking up the facts?
Hold on. Okay. Since Macy's, we're first talking about what they use in them. Since Macy's began using balloons for its parades, they've always contained helium, except once, in 1958, when a helium shortage required a company to resort to air-filled balloons lifted down the avenues with cranes.
Oh, okay. So because they are so heavy, they do need... I thought it was like a percentage helium, percentage air, so that it didn't pick people up as they're carrying it. I mean, maybe when helium goes in a balloon, it's not. I mean, I guess it is 100% helium. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
It says they use polyurethane. Would that cause it to float? That doesn't sound right.
Polyurethane? That's like a liquid.
Oh, no. This is what they were made out of. When the Macy's Parade first began, the balloons were sewn together manually from rubber. This was before the switch to helium. The balloons were originally filled with air. Today, polyurethane is used as the outside, and the process is almost entirely automated, with the design being scanned into a computer. How much do the balloons cost? Much is a Macy's Day balloon. Okay. Okay. Would you stop? Okay.
Are they manufactured in the U.S. or in China?
Because that. Do you want to check? You want to give me a guess?
Per balloon.
Per balloon.
$500,000.
That was really good. Each balloon in the Macy's Day Thanksgiving Parade uses 300,000 to 700,000 cubic feet of helium, filling every... Okay, filling...
That's just every, the helium.
Yeah, filling every balloon costs a minimum of $510,000. Just
not the material and the labor, it's just filling it.
Just filling it.
Oh my gosh. Imagine, I'm just thinking the infrastructure that they need, like, do they have a starting line with, like, okay, your balloon's on deck, we gotta fill you up, and it takes them, like, how long to fill a balloon? I mean, or do you just keep them, like, are they blown up already in a staging area, and then they, like, walk them out?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they get up at, like, fucking 3 a.m. to do this. Okay. The 2022 installment of the annual event will feature more than 5,000 volunteers, 16 giant balloons, 28 floats, and over 700 clowns, 12 marching bands, 10 performance groups, and a bevy of musical stars.
Oh my gosh.
Annual costs. Oh, you want to guess the annual cost?
$10 million.
Annual cost for the parade float supplies, and it can exceed $13 million, by the way. The staff salaries typically total $2.7 million to $4.5 million. The sheer magnitude of the Macy's parade is overwhelming.
So the answer was 13, upwards of 13?
13, but it says Macy's also has its own studio space and a massive supply of costumes to prepare for the parade. The assets are worth $8.9 million on any given year.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's wild. All right. I mean, that doesn't interest me more to watch it, but
new that balloon takes, cost that sponsors takes some... $190,000.
Wow. I was thinking of the The only thing close to that that I like have gone to that's been spectacle like that is like the hot air balloon glow and hot air balloon thing for the Derby Festival in Louisville.
Yeah.
Where they blow up the balloon, the hot air balloons in a field at the convention center, and they, you know, they show them blowing them up, and then they like elevate them, and then they actually take off. So that's pretty cool. I used to go there as a kid.
I saw that for the first time this last summer in Traverse City. Me and the lady that I was staying with went, and I was like blown away at how cool it was to watch those hot air balloons like go up, you know, when they're close to you.
Was it during the day or was it at night?
Yeah. Well, it was like right at sunset. And
nice.
But it was so cool. They had like 18 balloons, I think. And
that's a good number. Yeah.
I was like, when I was growing up and going to church, they were always like, you know how you get that feeling like in your bones, like that Jesus is around or whatever. I was like watching these balloons go up and I was like, this is the most I've ever felt. Is this how church was supposed to feel like? Like, is this what God was supposed to feel like?
Would you ever go up in one?
Hell fucking yeah.
Nice. I think I would too.
What question is that? Of course I'd go up in a fucking hot air balloon.
Rachel would never.
Oh my God, I would always. If somebody was like, do you want to go up in a hot air balloon? Right now I'd be like, bye, Ryan.
They had they had different shaped ones for the Derby Festival. They had ones that were like in the shape of cakes, and they had one that was like a cow. And for like the milk, I think it was whatever the milk brand was.
Oh yeah, Carnation Deans or whatever. Yeah.
And they were all different kinds. They were pretty cool. I think they had like a big birthday cake one.
That's so cool.
They're pretty neat. I'm sure my mom could dig up some old photos of that, but it was pretty neat. It was one that I always hate getting up early, but it was one where you had to go out at like 6 a.m.
But so worth it, right?
To get in the field and watch them. Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was like the yearly tradition. That was usually the main Derby Festival thing that we went to every year.
Yeah.
It was just that, because you just go to the fairgrounds and just walk in and watch them and hang out and walk over to the different tents and or booths or whatever, and pretty neat.
I always wanted to go to the one in New Mexico. It's like the biggest one in the country.
Albuquerque, yeah.
Yeah,
it happens in October, I think.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I'm gonna have to surprise Rachel with a trip to that at some point. I think that would be really fun.
Can I join? Yes. I'll just like show up. I'm like, oh, fancy seeing you here, Rachel.
It's like right. I want to say it's the end of October, or maybe it's the end of September. I can't remember, but yeah, it's right there in the fall time frame. So, I feel like the last couple times we went to Utah, there have been some hot air balloons that have been taken off, like around when we're there in January for the conference.
Yeah, when I lived in Washington, there was a hot air balloon company right near there, and they always used to take off from the winery that my aunt and uncle owned, and then it's cool because they have to like follow them around in a car and like go catch them.
Yeah. How do they come down? Do they just stop feeding it and it just like naturally just,
Well, I imagine that you can't like all together stop. I imagine that you have to like slowly let it go down.
Yeah, the ones, the Derby Festival one was always, they called it the hot air balloon race, but it wasn't really a race. What they did was they would take off and then they would go to a specific area and they would have sandbags and they would drop it onto an X on the ground.
Oh.
And the one that, you know, whoever got the closest with their sandbags, like, won. But it wasn't really a race, so they weren't, like, bumping into each other and shit.
Right. More of a competition.
Yeah. But I don't know where they landed. I'm guessing they landed probably at Bowman Field or something. Another, like, airport out in a certain end of town, so.
Well, sometimes you can't really plan the land, you know?
Yeah, I guess they're on the phone with their vehicle guy, the van guy, and they're like, okay, we're going to land over in this field over here. Come find us, and we'll get the balloon put up or whatever.
Yeah, like the air, they have an air tag on the bottom. Beep, 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 beep.
Yeah. Those baskets are pretty big, though.
Yeah.
I want to say it's like 8x8 or something like that.
Yeah. Super big. Man, so freaking cool.
Yeah. All right. Parade stuff. All right, what else is new? What's going on? You're in Indianapolis right now.
This year, I'm going to make you watch the Macy's Day Parade.
What are you going to do? Force my eyes open to watch it or what?
Yeah.
I'm not getting up at 8. It's on Thanksgiving Day?
I'm going to tape it at your parents' house and then make you watch it.
That sounds horrible.
Yep. Speaking of Thanksgiving, I talked to your mom and I was like, we need to talk about Thanksgiving. And I was like, yeah, she's like, yeah, we need to talk about what you're going to make. And I was like, everything? And she's like, yep.
That was easy.
She like did not even hesitate. She was like, yep, all of it.
I mean, I want to say she helped you though, right? She took direction to
your mom did such a great job helping cook last year. Yeah, we were a good team.
Yeah. I don't remember doing it, but I don't remember the day that it was. Was it actually on Thanksgiving Day or was it?
No, we did it the day before Thanksgiving.
Before, okay. And I can't remember if we were in town or if we came from Rachel's or something, but I don't think we were there for the cooking part, were we?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah. Okay.
But, yep. So that'll be fun.
Good stuff.
Anyway, how was your week?
My week is moving along nicely. I'm trying to think, what day is it? It's Wednesday. Yeah, I got quite a bit of studio time in this week. The main start of the week was getting PotSwap out. We had to send out all our assignments. PotSwap's moving along. This is still the early point where we had a lot of work to do. I'm sure Becca was ready to kill me earlier this week.
There was a lot you're not listening.
I don't even do this part, but the hardest part sounds like it's the assigning people.
Yeah.
Because if something's wrong, you're going to fucking hear it.
Yeah, and that's my job. And I think I got, like, I don't know how to find out if we, like, duplicated matches or anything like that, but I'm pretty sure I duplicated a few people.
Yeah, there was a little bit of... there's just so many steps. You got to, like, make sure you're not giving them, like, somebody international if they didn't ask for it, and then you got to make sure you don't give them themselves, which we had, like, maybe 4 or 5 people that got themselves.
That was the hard part, and I don't know how to check that, so...
Yeah, that was one of the conditional formatting things that I did last time, but I didn't really get time to go in there and do that check real quick. But luckily people are really quick to like let us know.
Yeah. P.S. guys, I got myself.
Yeah, they're like, was this just to validate my address was right? Because I got myself. So luckily people were just replying pretty quickly to let us know. And then, you know, a handful of people don't put full addresses on there. That was probably 10 to 12 people maybe. So, you know, you got to reach out to those individuals, ask them for their full address, relay it back to the other person so they don't find out. I mean, we could be like, hey, reach out to them by email and just ask. But then the surprise is ruined. So,
yeah.
Yeah, so that happened, and then we started the design contest. We got 44 people submit for the t-shirt design.
Insane.
I thought we were going to get like 10. I was like, oh, this will be manageable. We'll get like just a few. It'll be good.
It was not manageable. No, but it was fine. And I would say that 44 people, also a lot of people submitted multiple designs.
Yeah, one person submitted 6 designs. Quite a few people submitted a couple designs, but they were like just alternations of the same thing. It's just like on a white background versus a black background or whatever. Right. So those weren't like too varied, but yeah, I think next year we'll probably cut it to like one design and have people submit maybe through a form, through Google Form or something, so it's attached and
yeah, that'd be nice.
Like, I don't think we need the, like, we don't need the vector file technically until we get to the final person. So, like,
maybe. That's a very fair point that we did not think back about. What's happening?
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, what the fuck did you just do?
Okay. I just touched the headphone thing because it wasn't straight.
That was awful. Thank you for that.
Sorry. yeah, we'll probably have him submit a form and just be like, we need the JPEG because that's what matters for Instagram voting.
Yeah.
And then we'll get the vector later. So, but we got some great designs. Yeah, I'm curious to see who comes out on top. We'll find out later this week or early next week. So.
Yeah, there's some really good ones.
It's a lot of work. Riley's been helping out. So Riley's new to the team. She actually works with me at Citrix, and she's a Gen Z, so she's like all up on this Instagram stuff. I'm like, do you know how to do that? She's like, Ryan, I'm Gen Z. Like, I know what I'm doing here.
Yeah, but I got her on one today. I felt really proud of myself.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, she was like, how do I tell if, like, what if it's 50-50? And I was like, did you look at the number?
Yeah. She's like, oh, okay.
She's doing this out of the goodness of her heart.
Yeah, literally. Totally volunteer. And I'm like, oh, is she going to regret this?
Hopefully we're not overwhelming her.
Yeah. Because I feel like I have a vision for what I expect for certain things. And I, like, have high expectations.
Because no.
I don't want something to come across as, like, okay, I foresee this is going to come up. Plus, I generally just know people on PotSwap are gonna let you know if something's off because there's just so many people involved.
Yep.
That you're gonna hear it probably 5 times if something's wrong or more.
Yeah.
And it'll weigh on you.
It's funny because, like, this weekend I just did a show in Louisville, like right outside of Louisville, and the people putting it on were freaking lovely. But I remember signing up for the show and having. And in the email, them saying, we have a lot of people submitting, so if you did not get into the show, you will not get an email saying that you didn't get in. And after the show, I went up to the director and I was like, I have a recommendation. And I was like, I think you need to tell people if they are rejected or not. And I said, as somebody that sends out thousands of emails once a year, once this becomes bigger, you're going to regret that decision.
because they're opening themselves up to snarky emails saying, like, hey, I didn't get any feedback. Am I in or am I not? Or what?
Exactly. Yeah. And, like, people being like, well, I didn't know if I got in or not. Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I was like, yeah, you definitely need something definitive.
Because something easy that happened today was somebody contacted us and said, hey, I thought I was in. I submitted it this time, like, I didn't get any contact, and it was that they put the wrong email in. So, like, that could totally happen to people.
Yeah, it totally can, and it does often. But, yeah.
So, yeah. Whew.
Woo-wee.
Yeah. We're getting a skill set that we did not know we were getting ourselves into.
You want me to run a multi-million pot swap? I got you.
Here's what you should do. Here's what you shouldn't do. Here's how to avoid questions and confusion.
Don't do
it. And spark questions and confusion.
Yes. For sure.
So, yeah, other than that, I'm just getting a lot of studio time. I've been cranking out the mugs like crazy. It's been a lot of handling this week. So.
Oh, good.
Probably handled 100 mugs this week and a handful of soup bowls. So kind of tired of that, but it's freeing up my damp boxes, which is good. That feels productive. So,
oh, that's good.
Yeah. And, the backyard still looks like crap. So it's been raining a lot. So the dude was here today and was saying how we have a big backyard project going on and we're still trying to get it fixed. It's been going on for like 3 weeks. So,
Four.
Yeah, he was like, it's too soft back there. He's like stepping on the compacted concrete, and it's like, or the gravel, and it's like waving like a little,
Oh my God.
And he's like, yeah, you can't put block on top of this. Like, it needs to dry out so it's nice and firm, or else it's going to look like shit and it's going to keep settling. So it's like, yeah. Okay. But yeah, I'm like, the deadline is November 11th. I need to get this done before my home show next weekend. That's like the most important date.
Yeah.
And then we're about to go on a trip to Nashville here this weekend.
Oh, fun. What are you going to do?
Rachel got, we're mostly staying at like the fancy hotel. We're staying at the Graduate that you were at.
Oh yeah.
We're staying there for a day. And then I think we're staying at another, like a, I want to say it's like a, I want to say like vintage hotel or vintage motel or something. That's okay. Got like kind of a 70s vibe or something. And, we'll stay there a couple nights. And I think we're going to get some good food. I think there's a tiki bar there maybe. I'm trying to see if there's a comedy show or something we can go to. It's just kind of like a little fall trip that we're trying out, so.
Might I recommend something as you go to the Graduate?
Yes. Don't go to the pool upstairs?
Well, that, but you're going to need quarters for the parking.
Quarters?
Yeah.
Why?
Like, if you're going to park overnight, you can park on the street.
We're just going to pay for it.
You're going to pay $20 to park there?
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't pay for parking that often, but we're only staying there one night, and then we're going to the other one. Mainly because I was like, I don't want to pay multiple nights of parking. Because it's already an arm and a leg to stay there. It's already like almost $200 a night or plus to stay there.
There's really easy parking. You just have to pay with quarters.
I know, but how you pay for the whole night?
You don't have to pay overnight. It stops at like 6 p.m. It's just,
that's it?
It's just metered parking, yeah. It like stops at 6 or 8, yeah.
Oh.
And then okay. You just get up at 7 and go feed the meter for 2 hours or whatever. Easy peasy.
How did it, but why can't you use, there's not an app or something to do the phone thing?
No.
It's only quarters? Okay.
It's only quarters. That's why I'm telling you, because it's a old school system.
Okay. We might just pay for parking, but, you know.
That too. I don't think you have to pay on Sundays either.
Okay.
Also, if you want a fun museum, the Lane Auto Museum.
L-A-N-E?
L-A-N-E. It's got all of the old concept cars that, like, didn't work out.
Uh-huh.
Worth every penny. They're really fucking cool.
I kind of remember you, I don't know if you shared photos from it or you just talked about it, but I kind of remember.
It's that. Even got, like, cars from, like, Hitler and, like, weird fucking history cars and, like, shit like that.
Wow. Is it just a huge warehouse of cars?
Mm-hmm. And it's got, like, wooden cars and two-wheeled cars and, like, yeah, it's really fucking cool.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, we'll have to look that up. Because we're we're kind of there on weird days. We're getting there, I think we're getting there Sunday, and then we're there Monday, Tuesday, come back Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, that would be perfect for that.
So, yeah, so we'll see what's going on. I was trying to see if there was, like, a hockey game or something. The Predators are not in town, so I would have liked to go to one of those.
Their hockey team is called the Predators.
Nashville Predators.
That's ridiculous. It's an awful name.
You don't like that?
It's a stupid name. Like, it's not even a thing. It's just
they're tigers or something. It's like a tiger, I think.
That's stupid. Predators? No, that's dumb. Like,
I don't know the origin of the Nashville Predators.
It's just a general. It's just a fucking general motherfucking, like, term that they've decided to make a mascot. Like, that doesn't even work.
You're like, why is it a predator?
Yeah. Well, I have a friend that lives there. I can text him and get a good meal recommendation. He's in the industry, so.
Nice. I mean, I'm definitely trying to get some, like, hot chicken or some, you know, some of that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Cool. Fun.
Yeah, so that should be good. I'm trying to see some of the Yeah, I don't really see much about predators here, but anthropomorphic saber-toothed tiger named Nosh. It's a saber-toothed tiger. It's not a, yeah, so. There you go.
Okay. Works.
Maybe there was a big prehistoric amount of saber-toothed tigers in the Nashville area back in the day.
No. I'll bet you they have a saber-toothed tiger at the Nashville Zoo.
It said... Sorry. Wait, are they still a thing? They're not a thing, right?
I don't know.
three candidates for voting. The Ice Tigers, the Fury, and Attack.
Wow.
His own submission to vote Predators. All right.
All righty.
All right, what's new with you? What's going on? You did a show this weekend. How'd it go?
Oh, I did a show, and as far as money is concerned, it was awful. But I made $740.
How much was the show? It sounded like a $50, $75 show.
It was like $120.
Oh, okay.
Worth maybe every 50. Fucking penny, though. Okay. Here's the thing. As far 50, as money,
$50.75 wasn't for a 2-day. That's more like a 1-day show. Okay.
Yeah, it's a 2-day. As far as the show and how much money I made, it was balls. As far as everything else, it was phenomenal. So, like, as we know, I base shows not just off of money, but off of experience. And
seems like you base them more on experience than money.
You know what? That might be true. So this was at a beautiful farm outside of Louisville, about 20 minutes away from your parents' house, maybe 30.
And it was that far from their house? It looked like it was like 10 minutes away.
Well, it would have been if it was like as the crow flies, but like getting there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but it, this farm is owned by the Brown family, which is like a multi-billion-dollar family.
From Brown Foreman?
Is that what it is? Yes, that's
Brown Foreman is like big bourbon country people.
Yeah.
That's like they sponsor Churchill Downs and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah, it's them. So,
wow. Okay.
So the guy that owns it is married to La Brown or whatever her name is. And he's like a big art guy. And so they bought this farm and they have a restaurant on the farm. It's called Barn 8 that I would highly recommend. And if you want a fancy dinner and,
the place is called Hermitage Farm, right?
Yeah. Hermitage Farm. And they've got art everywhere. And they've got like a big house with like a bunch of art in it and blah, blah, blah. And, they provided they provided lunch for all the vendors. They, gave us free shots of whiskey at the end of the day.
Probably then, bourbon, but okay.
Oh yeah, bourbon. Sorry. I apologize. They gave us Maker's Mark. And then they gave us a hot meal the second day. They gave us Jimmy John's the first day, and then they gave us a hot meal from the actual restaurant the second day. I had a pepperoni.
Oh, my gosh.
I had a pepperoni hand patty or whatever, and it was literally shaped as a hand. And
really?
It had like a cut in it, like it was cut, you know? Mm-hmm. And it was so fucking good. And we could get whatever we wanted. And they were like, do you want a mimosa? Do you want this? Like, they served alcohol. Like,
that sounds I'm not awesome. Even
kidding you. It was so fun.
I feel like I should do that. I should do that next year.
You should do it. They had candy for, like, they had candy for all the kids. Like, it was, the fall leaves were everywhere. It was absolutely fucking gorgeous. We went to dinner at the restaurant that night, me and A&F Pottery. She did it. She was the one that told me about it, Jessie.
Jessie,
yep. And she's super freaking nice. And we went to dinner at the fancy restaurant, and then we walked. It was raining. The only problem is that there was rain. We had to close up early. But
this restaurant looks amazing. This thing, Barn 8, this thing is so huge. There's a greenhouse.
It was so fucking good.
Wow.
And then they have this, like, walk out behind the barn, out into the forest, like, the trees. And they have a light show, like a light art installation, that they literally have mapped to the trees. So, like, if a tree falls down, they have to fucking redo the light show. Like, there's lights on specific fucking leaves. I'm not even kidding. And it was the most amazing venue I've ever been to in my entire life. It was so cool. And the guy that, like, owns it was there. Like, he showed up.
Yeah. It says Laura Lee Brown and Steve Wilson.
Steve Wilson. And Steve Wilson's her husband. And he was dressed really nicely. And I did not know he was the owner. And I almost yelled out, like, yo, you look amazing. But I did not. And I probably should have, because then maybe he would have bought my cups. But yeah,
probably multimillionaire dude. He's like, I own this place.
Billionaire.
Okay, whatever.
Did you see any
horses? It says there's thoroughbreds over there too.
There's thoroughbreds. I didn't look to see the horses. I think Lloyd saw some horses, but
How do they feel about Lloyd being over there?
Well, I just asked if I could let him out while I was packing up, and they were like, "Yeah, that's fine." And he just trotted around and looked at all the things. To top off the whole week of me not making any money but having a fabulous time, this made the whole week. The lady that buys for the Kentucky Museum of Modern Art or whatever, KMAC.
Kentucky Museum of Arts and Crafts, I think is what it's called.
Yeah, which doesn't match the MAC.
Oh, yeah. Contemporary Art Museum. Kentucky Museum. Contemporary Art. It just says KMAC Contemporary Art Museum.
Anyway, I think it's the Arts and Crafts Museum. I think you're right. She saw my cups and was like, wow, these are amazing. Do you want to be in our gift shop? And I was like, fuck yeah, I do. And
it's a nice place. They have some, well, I don't, you said they changed ownership or something, but they're.
No, they just closed it down for this. Oh yeah, she said they did change like something. But, so anyway, come Thanksgiving, I'm going to have cups in KMAC, so.
Nice. Yeah, it's a nice place. They my old pottery teacher from high school actually had some stuff in there. He made like face mugs and stuff.
Yeah.
Ooh, maybe you'll be on their website. I'm looking at some of their local artisans on there.
Yeah,
They got some really nice stuff. So it's like very colorful. It's very there's some modern stuff, there's home stuff,
So that was basically the highlight of my life. So that's it.
Nice. They have some jewelry, but it looks more like.
I think she just wants my cups.
Oh, okay.
Which is fine. And it's like they take 60%, and I was like, I don't even fucking care. Or no, they take 40. They take 40. And I was like, 60-40,
yeah.
Yeah. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. It says they're going to open up November 10th, so.
Yeah, they're closed down to change things around. They have to change the.
Says more accessibility and change over our exhibitions and holiday market.
Yeah. And sounds like they're a really accessible museum. Like if you're a student, you can get in for free, I'm pretty sure. So.
Yeah. I kind of remember going there and it was free from what I remember. I haven't been there in probably 10 years or so. Not 10 years. Rachel and I think went through there maybe 6 years ago or something. Six or 7 years ago.
Oh, you remember that fancy-ass hotel in downtown Louisville? Like 21C? Yeah, that guy, Steve Wilson, owns that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I wonder if it's a parent company, because there's 21C in Cincinnati.
No, he owns all of them. Yeah.
Okay. He's a good guy to know, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And did you know the 21C has art? They have art museum, like... exhibitions in the lower level and
I don't know if he goes over to KMAC or anything, but basically the guy that ran the show was like, this is a good place for you to know people, and Like,
yeah, it sounds like it.
So, anyway, we'll be going back next year.
Good circles to be in. I'll add that to my, I forgot what it was called. It was called the Maker.
Meet Your Maker.
Meet Your Maker. Okay, yeah, there we go.
Yeah.
Meet Your Maker, and that was October, the end of October.
I think they're going to be doing it earlier this year just because of the weather.
Okay. Yeah, did Jessie do it before? Is that how she knew to recommend you, or she was just giving you an idea of, like,
yeah,
hey,
no,
maybe you should try this one?
She did it last year, and it sounds like she's, like, kind of you, where she just makes a bunch of money. Like, she did really well. So, like, I think you'll
She's
do
local
really well
to Louisville, so.
Yeah. And she has really cool, like, carved things and stuff, and, like, little mushrooms, little pumpkins, and stuff like that. And she was the first booth, which was awesome. So.
Yeah, I saw she had a little mix-up or a little issue with her tent the second day because of the rain. But
it was a moment, yes.
Yeah, but it looked like she salvaged a lot of stuff, which is great.
Yeah, only two pieces got broken. And then Ashley Stewart was there. So.
Yeah, I know Ashley.
Yeah. So that was cool. I got to meet her. That was really exciting, and I got a little ghost. So.
Nice. Yeah, I've talked to her a little bit about some shows because she's local to Louisville, and she was thinking about some shows outside of Louisville, so I think I gave her some Cincinnati and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know how the one she went to, because it's so much different when you recommend a show. Like, I'm 15 minutes from a lot of shows here, so if I recommend a show for somebody from Louisville, it's like, would I really
recommend it
to them?
Yeah.
If it's a one-day, two-hour drive for them, like, would it be worth it for a $700 day? Maybe not, or a $500 day.
Right.
Kind of like West Side Market. Like, would I recommend that to somebody driving 2 hours away for that if it's their first time doing it? Like, you kind of got to dedicate yourself to doing it. But I feel like they want to support local people more. So I wonder if that's a factor.
Right.
But
exactly. But yeah, I got to see your mom afterwards. And, you know, it was good.
Nice.
Your dad made potato soup. It was delicious.
Ooh, yummy.
Yeah. And grilled cheese.
I haven't had a grilled cheese in a while.
I highly recommend it. Yeah. It was very good.
That's one where you kind of, I feel like you need to have that on white bread.
I don't know. I've had some pretty fucking good grilled cheese on some wheat, some like nutty wheat breads.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh. I feel like white bread are like, if there's a little bit of like Italian seasoning or something in it, or
do you know what my favorite grilled cheese is, which you won't like, but I'm gonna say it anyway, is brie and apples.
Okay, you just had some brie and apples recently, didn't you? At Amrita's? She didn't have apples, but or was it?
I messed up the brie really badly, but yes. Well, you guys got stuck in traffic, so it wasn't even warm when you got here, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't have eaten it anyways. Rachel might have, but.
She liked it.
Okay.
Yeah. You cheese people. Okay. We should probably start talking about regular stuff.
Yeah, do you want to hear a review we got?
Yes.
Okay, so this one came. We haven't gotten a review in a while, so I just happened to check before this. I was like, I need to, like, I wonder if somebody did. So this one's titled A Perfect Listen for Long Studio Sessions. 5-star. At first, the length and format of the show seemed long to me, and then I turned it on while throwing and trimming, and my opinion totally changed. I love hearing longtime potters chatting, talking shop, and hearing from others they bring on as guests is also great. Thanks you two for doing this. It makes me feel less alone while working in my home studio space. That is from Diane Sanfilippo on Instagram, and her ceramics one is Diane Ceramics on Instagram.
Yeah. Oh, I didn't know she had two.
Yeah, that's like her personal one, and then she has her ceramic specific one, because she just recently went into full-time ceramics in the last, I don't know, probably year, within the last year.
Cool.
So.
I told him he had to surprise me with the review. I like that. I don't really think about that too much, too. Like, I could imagine that if you're just listening to our podcast without just doing pots, that it might be a little bit boring.
I think of, like, it's okay if I were listening to something that I'm like, drive me to Louisville, so it's like 2 hours dedicated. I know I'm going to be able to fill the whole thing. If I was driving 30 minutes to go pick up some clay, I would get kind of annoyed listening for 30 minutes and not really getting to a topic that I wanted to learn about.
For sure. I've told you this before, but I listen to a podcast semi-frequently, and it's about cults, and the two people that do it have really awful voices to me, and so I just listen to it for the interviews, and they do the same thing that we do. But they say, like, what was the cultiest thing you did this week? And I skip through it every single time.
Like, how do you know how far to jump?
I just skip until I hear somebody else's voice, and then I go back.
Okay.
And, that works. So, all that to say, if you want to skip us, Ryan always marks it in the chapters thing, I think. And...
yeah, I've been doing that. Unless it's an interview. If it's an interview, we're going in cold. So, like, there's no... you're going to hear people immediately.
But anyway, we do not blame you one bit.
Yeah. Usually I chapter mark it to listener questions as a chapter mark, and then I put topic of the day. So there's no telling if the top... you know, the listener questions could be 45 minutes in or an hour in, and then the topic of the day could be an hour and 15, hour and 30 in. We don't know. So
yeah. So anyway, we don't blame you. If you're going out, like, I remember somebody, Victoria was like, I go for walks and I always skip the banter. I'm like, dude, totally fine.
Yeah. Can't expect everybody to listen to every bit of what we say, you know?
Right. Totes. Okay. Shall we? Ooh. Do you want to do a... I can read this question, the first question that's to you.
Yeah.
Okay. It says, hey, Ryan, kiln maintenance question for you. How do you know when it's time to change the thermocouple? I have a scut. The metal part of the thermocouple looks black and dropping black flecks inside the kiln. One person I asked said, wait until it fails and the kiln will tell you. Not sure I want to risk a kiln load of firing that way. Do you have a better recommendation? That's Sarah Hagopian.
Hagopian, yeah. She's Hagopian. In Cincinnati here. She's local to me.
Cool.
So I did reply to her and just basically said, hey, I replace mine every time I replace my elements. So I feel like that's a pretty good rule of thumb. But they're so easy to replace that if you're worried about it and you see the black flecks and stuff, you know, don't wait until it fails.
Don't wait until it fails, but if black flecks, like, immediately...
yeah, I mean, if it's, like, significant, but, I mean, my Olympic, that thing was flecking all over the place.
What the fleck? Like, what?
Yeah.
It just flecked its life away.
I mean, there's probably a middle ground between, like, the elements are going to go and the thermocouple. Like, maybe you didn't replace it the last time you did the elements, so it's really got a long life and you're waiting for it to fail almost, but, like, mm-hmm. I mean... I was basically saying, hey, they're pretty affordable, especially if you only have one of them, that you can replace it if you're, like, worried about it.
So this is my rule of thumb, which is a little bit different than yours, obviously, because we're different people. And I'm a little bit more risky, but also I think it definitely matters if you have one thermocouple versus three thermocouples, because a timely question for us, for me and Sarah here at the 201 Studios, our thermocouple just failed, one of them, and we have three. So I do not believe this is a case for an L&L, but for the Konart, if one of them fails, you can actually fire the kiln and the other one just says fail and it will go off of the other two. It's not recommended, but that's what we did because it's Sarah and she's like, we're gonna risk it. And so we did. But so if you have three thermocouples, I say wait until it fails. If you have one thermocouple, I say wait until the top gets, like, really itty bitty. And Like once it starts getting itty bitty, test the cone and then replace it. But don't wait for it to fail, I would say. Yeah, like don't wait for it to fail if it's just one thermocouple, because Scuds only have one, and Olympics only have one. L&L's and Cone Arts have two, or three. So that's kind of my rule of thumb as far as it goes.
Yeah, I mean, what's the risk here? I don't like a thermocouple, maybe $40. I mean, they probably.
I think it's $27, $25.
Yeah, they can't cost more than. Yeah, so, I mean, is it worth risking a kiln load if it's like you said, if it's flecking like pretty soon, like don't change it then. But
yeah,
I'm trying to remember if it if you notice the time of the firing going longer because of the thermocouple. Or if that's more, I think that's more the element life is taking
slash
longer.
Relay,
but,
yeah.
Yeah, but the but yeah, if it, you know, if it's getting up there, I mean, you should definitely replace it when you replace all your elements. I feel like that's a good rule of thumb to replace it all at once, everything at once. So you're like starting at one. Do you do that with your cone art?
No. Well, to be fair, I have Lloyd sleeping on the chairs over there. I have.
Well, to be fair.
Oh, I'm sorry. To be fair, I have not even ever replaced the elements to the cone art, and we need to do that. We're on firing 209.
Oh my gosh.
And so, you know, it's time. We've just been putting it off. So, yeah. But I will replace the top and the bottom. I will not replace the middle because I've already replaced the middle one.
Would you ever move them to a different area of the kiln if you've got older ones? Like, where is the safest place to put an old one?
Probably your middle. I want my top and my bottom to be more consistent than the inside.
Just because the top and bottom are going to be kind of a gauge for how the middle is probably going to be anyways.
Yeah, but Sarah said she put a cone in there when she fired and our top one is dead. And she said it fired great. So I don't know if it really matters. Now, the middle, I mean, maybe I'm changing my mind. Because, like, all of the Scott kilns and all of the Olympic kilns all have them right in the middle. So maybe you want the newest one in the middle.
Yeah, I don't know how your... I don't know how your board and everything works on yours. Does it kind of have zone control like an L&L where it's going to adjust based on the thermocouple?
I believe so, yeah.
In that area?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
How did you... And it just error code, right?
It just said fail. It was just like, fail.
Oh, okay. So if it, like, loses a connection... Because I'm guessing it forms that connection across... It, like, goes across the two pieces that are sticking out, and they're connected. So if there's no connection there anymore, then it's just not going to...
Yeah, it just said fail. And we did have an error code, but that was because something with the previous firing, it just wasn't getting to temp. The bisque firing wasn't getting to temp. And I don't know. I mean, it was because of the thermocouple being bad, but the thermocouple hadn't quote-unquote failed yet. So once it says fail, I think then it fired fine. Once it was like, oh, hey, this is out of commission.
Yeah. So. Is there a number of firings? It's hard for me to keep track of the number. I mean, I could look at my book and do that, or like jot down there's a way in most kilns to look in the manual to see like how many firings you've done, but I'm not jogging like, okay, I'm on firing number 67.
Well, like, it just shows you if you say review program, it'll show you at the end of that. It'll say how many firings.
But is there a rule of thumb of how many firings you would say a thermocouple typically lasts? I mean, it varies based on what, if you're doing bisque, if you're doing glaze, how hot your glaze is.
I mean, this thermocouple's lasted 209 firings, so.
Yeah.
I've only replaced one thermocouple in this kiln. So, I don't know.
Do you have other ones on hand?
I have a whole box of thermocouples and elements. So.
And yeah. Relays?
No. Do I have relays? I don't have relays. Do I have relays? I don't know. Yeah. Honestly, I haven't even opened the box. The box could be completely wrong. I bought it like 5 months ago.
And the last thing I did tell Sarah, I was like, by the way, you should also have a thermocouple on hand, because let's say your thing craps out and it fails. Like, who's to say you try to order it and they say, sorry, we're out of thermocouples.
Yeah.
I mean, there's likely many places you can get a thermocouple, but I was just like, have one on hand so that when shit hits the fan and you got to replace it, you can replace it in like 15 minutes. It's really easy.
Yeah. The bitchy thing about Konarts is that the fucking thermocouples are 8 inches. They're not even the normal ones. So you have to get like the super fucking long ones. And it's really annoying.
Yeah. So theirs is a little more proprietary. Is it still like a $27, $30 thermocouple, or is it more?
Honestly, don't know. Because I had to get them, so I didn't even ask the price. It was like, and also it was Canadian versus American, so I there was like a conversion rate that I just didn't want to deal with. So,
yep. Just
put it on my card.
Well, you know you can go to Hot Kilns now, because they have a whole support section that is very detailed with questions you might have. So if you have an L&L or you don't, there's a lot of videos they're producing now with, like,
yeah.
I'm just reading the categories of what they have videos on. Installation, ventilation, operation, firing issues, maintenance, error codes, troubleshooting, and instruction manuals. So there's, like, multiple videos on each of these categories.
Yeah.
And it's going to be applicable for, like, whatever kiln you have. And they're well-produced videos, so it you know it's good lighting and all that stuff, and it's from the source. Like, they're not gonna, you know, they're not having some Joe Schmo doing this that may be telling you inaccurate information.
Yeah, I would say that their videos and their, like, website, honest to God, because that's what I go to, like, whenever I have shitty things happen to my kiln, without a doubt, their information and videos are better than just calling them, almost better than calling them and being like, what's wrong with my kiln? Because you can find almost anything. Like, they don't even need customer service, essentially. Like, it's like all there. Like, there was something a while ago that I was like, I didn't even fucking know you could do that. It teaches you how to do absolutely everything.
Yeah, I mean, this, like, the ventilation one, there's a bunch of stuff about, like, why it matters, how to effectively ventilate. It's got diagrams of, like, a downdraft vent and, like, a bunch of details. And then it's got, you know, a bunch of install videos. Like, yeah, it's great. So.
Yeah. 10 out of 10, would recommend. And also, honestly, if you just Google an error code, that's probably going to be the first thing that pops up, because it's going to be hotkilns.com.
Yep. And so many of those have the Bartlett controllers that they're very, like, Olympics have Bartletts, and I don't know if Scut is technically the same Bartlett or if they have similar error codes.
Yeah.
But HotKilns.com.
That was weak.
That was weak. HotKilns.com.
Yeah, seriously, the best resource ever. I don't even have a freaking L&L, and I use it pretty constantly. So.
Yeah. All right. Do we want to go to the topic for the day? Someday you will have one.
Oh, for sure. In my future, I will have an L&L kiln. The last one. I've gotten every other kiln before that. Just the last one. Best for last.
Yep. All right. Do we want to go to the topic for the day?
Yes.
All right. So this was like an older question that we got, but also somebody asked me this recently because they were wondering about it. So it has to do with health and safety and cleanliness in a shared studio space. But also it applies to, like, you know, home studios and whatnot. That one came from Anna Dewecki on Instagram. And then Danny from a sketchy art workshop in Canada asked me this recently.
And as I'm literally, like, puffing silica dust into my face, what's our disclaimer, Ryan? We have a disclaimer this time.
Our disclaimer is that we are not experts. We're talking from our experience. Don't take our word as gospel. There's other resources out there that can tell you. We're not going to tell you this is how you exactly avoid silicosis. This is how you get silicosis. Here is the threshold of when you will get it and when you won't get it. We're just giving you advice of how we keep our studios clean, keep up with it.
Or advice of what not to do.
Yeah, what to do, what not to do, but it's not like hard and fast. You know, this is the only resource you need.
Yeah.
So, and we will refer to some others as well, so.
Yes, other resources.
Yes.
So, as somebody, as somebody who keeps an extremely tidy studio, let's go through the things that you make sure to keep on top of.
Generally, the thing that I think is probably, like, is applicable the most for me is that I don't get clay on the floor as best as possible. Or if I do, I pick it up immediately.
That is true. And he yells at you if you don't.
Yeah. Like, you left my studio and I was like, she didn't really clean up the, like, bits of clay trimmings and stuff.
I did. I swept all the way under. I did. I swept all the way under. I swept all the way around. Some of them got caught in a little crack, and I put it in the trash. I did. I was like, if I don't clean this up, Ryan's going to be mad at me.
I mean, you did okay. I would say you're about 90% of the way. 85% of the way.
Better fucking broom.
Well, most of it was, a lot of it was just like around the splash pan on the deck. There was a bunch of trimmings on the deck.
Because I like cleaned the stuff out in the splash pan. I might have missed that part.
Yeah.
He's got a lot of rules. There's a lot of rules.
Yeah. Anything dry, like anything that is going to dry and create dust, should be taken care of before it becomes dry and becomes dust.
Yes.
So that's my, like, pretty general thing I try to keep up with. You know, not having, whether it's as simple as, hey, I throw on a bat and I have, you know, I cut them off the bat. I don't leave the clay slabs on the bat. I clean them off before they dry out. And usually that's just scraping it off with a rib or something. Get them into my reclaim bin so that it's not additional dust that's just going to be created. And, you know, you stack the bats up and then you end up with dry clay on the bottoms of the bats. You're scraping them, they just fall off onto, you know, wherever. You know, you're going to end up maybe throwing them on the wheel and like, oh, I can just scrape that off when it's dry. But it's like, then you're just going to be scraping off dry stuff and it's just going to be going up in the air when you're scraping it. So,
yeah. Yep.
So there's that is the main, like, clay thing. Like, clay itself, when it dries, is just going to be, you know, that's the main thing that I think is going to be hazardous.
Yeah.
What were you thinking? You're looking for something. What are you looking for?
A scissors. I don't know if I told you this, but I found this, like, medication to, like, help with my ADHD, and I forgot to take it today. I'm having a rough day. It's been like, it's not a stimulus, but it's like, it is. It's like one of those things that once they figure it out, they'll probably make it like that you have to have a prescription. It's been helping quite a bit, actually. But I forgot to take it today, so here we are. So I'm just playing with this brush on the table while we talk. The thing for me is I keep a lot less cleanly of a studio than Ryan. I've always had to, I think this will resonate more with people that don't work in their own space, but I've always kind of had to like think about how I'm going to leave my space eventually. And when I had the studio back in Monroe, it was like awful cleaning it. It was awful because like I was one person and I couldn't mop it every day, you know? And so the things that have made it easier for me is like I think it's like generally knowing, like, you know, generally like making sure the floors are clean and making sure you're like wiping things up while they're wet and not when they're dry, and like, you know, keeping the floors like swept if you can, well, whatever, you know, like swept however, like, way you can swept, and cleaning off your bats. And like, I don't move my, like, you know, like you, I clean off my bats as quickly as possible. I don't just leave fucking clay like sitting on my bats. And I have different bats than you, I have the Masonite bats. And people that I've told to get Masonite bats are like, oh, those only lasted like a year for me. I've had mine for 7 years.
It's
And
and is it partially because I leave clay on them and it helps them warp
yes,
more
they
because
like,
they're still
yeah,
moisture?
and they like clean the sides and they clean all the things. You're not supposed to clean the sides because then water gets in there and then it warps them and it makes them fuzzy. And like, they're just now dying. And, but the biggest, most simplest thing that I can recommend for a cleanly studio, especially like leaving a space, is before you set up a wheel, go to the dollar store, buy a dollar shower curtain, and pin it to your wall in front of your wheel. It will alleviate a bajillion times of cleaning your wall after, like, especially with somebody who doesn't have a splash pan. Me, I just have like a moon of clay on the wall, and so I that it's on a fucking shower curtain, and I don't have to worry about it once I leave, and I
If
think
you
it's
had a wheel that was conducive to a splash pan, would you prefer a splash pan?
no, I don't know. I have a splash pan on the.
How's the Artista with the
In
splash
the
pan?
Artista, and I don't mind that splash pan. The problem is that sometimes they're too high. The splash pan's too high compared to the wheel for me. It needs to be pretty close to the wheel height. But yeah, I haven't thrown a ton on the Artista. I do a lot of different stuff on it, so, but yeah, anyway, I think that it's good to just cover the space around you, the wall around you, with like a shower curtain or something that you can just take off and throw away when you leave. That's a huge, huge thing for me. And I clean my wheel pretty much every time that I leave it. Like, it's not like super, super, super clean, but it's not like an absolute wreck, you know? It looks like a wreck right now. Because I left on in a in bad terms with the wheel, apparently. But I also don't have a sink here.
Yeah, I don't have a sink either, so it would be a nightmare if I was a very messy worker and didn't have a sink, 'cause it's so much extra effort to clean.
So how do you go about like how do you go about not having a sink? Because I think that that's something to talk about too, is that there's a lot of people that don't have sinks. Like they work in their basement or they work in a space like a shed or something like that that doesn't necessarily have a sink. So how is your water system? Let's talk about that.
Yes. So I have cats, which means I have many cat litter buckets. If you've seen my studio, I have many of these buckets around with my clay prepped in them, with my my raw materials in my back room in there, and I have extra ones. So I just have a bunch of water in a 5-gallon bucket.
Okay.
And I pretty much any time that I'm cleaning my hands at the end of a throwing session or whatnot, I will dunk my hands in the water, clean them off. I have a sponge right there next to it as well, like a big sponge. And I clean my hands off. I dunk the sponge in the water, make sure I get all of the clay bits out of there and off my hands and whatnot. And then I dry my hands on a fairly clean, like a clean towel.
Yeah.
And then that towel is going to get gross over time because the clay on your hands is still like has a smell to it and it will age and stuff. So I'll clean those towels every, probably every 2 weeks or so, 3 weeks maybe. Cause I just, you know, being in a studio, having towels to clean your hands is important. So I got tons of towels, like full size towels that are old, and I've got hand towels that are, you know, maybe 8 to 10 hand towels. So I think that's good. And then back in the, so that's the wet studio. That's the only thing I use that bucket for washing my hands off. And then if Erica's working in there and she's, you know, painting on slip or something like that, she'll use that to rinse out the brushes and things like that so that she's not leaving underglaze or slip caked on there. Those can get kind of gross. So she started when they settle, it can get kind of gross in there. So she might use like another little cup of water to rinse those out and dump it out in the yard when it gets nasty. And then in the back area where I glaze, I have other buckets that I use just for rinsing. And they're just 5-gallon buckets again, the cat litter buckets that we rinse the drills out with, any of the spatulas or whatever we use when mixing glazes or, you know, stir sticks like toilet brushes or whatnot. We always use those buckets specifically to rinse out the glaze material, which we'll then recycle back into mystery glaze. So, two buckets in the back with the glazing, one bucket in the studio for wet clay rinsing, and that's pretty much it. And if we need to sand, we have a separate bucket for sanding.
Okay. And you have a spigot. You have like an actual spigot to like give you water.
Yeah. Yeah. Our spigot is like on the inside of the house, and then it goes to the spigot on the outside of the house is like on the same line. So I just use the spigot to, you know, that's what we get the water from. For mixing the glazes up, for refilling those buckets, for getting a little bit of water for the sanding, for my water buckets for the studio. That's one other thing. I don't dump my water from throwing. My throwing water, I don't dump that out at the end of the session. I just leave it, let it settle.
Is disgusting. Continue.
When it gets low enough and I have enough dry trimmings, I will dump it into my reclaim bucket.
Gross.
And then okay. I'll fill it with new water. But I don't dump that water out maybe once a month, probably less than that.
If I had as close an access to the outdoors as you do, I would dump that every single fucking day.
No. I'm usually in there till 1 a.m. I don't want to go out there and dump my water bucket every day.
Doesn't matter.
Well, I think you value clean water when you're throwing with it more than I do. I can throw with some slippy water. Like, I get it. When it gets to a point, it's counterproductive, especially with the white clay. The speckle clay is a little less because it settles pretty well.
Yeah.
The white clay will suspend a little more.
That is definitely the Marianne Otis of Becca Otis. That's me. Like, me and my mom are the same as when it comes to water. We are, like, picky bitches. So as far as what I do, because I don't actually have a spigot anywhere near here, I have to walk probably 50 steps that away to get water.
Is it a spigot though where you get it, or do you have to get it from like the sink?
I have to put my 5-gallon bucket into the sink.
Oh,
so, okay. So, okay, this is what I do. We've tried it a few ways here, but this is what works the most. First, I have 2 5-gallon buckets. I have a dirty 5-gallon bucket and a clean 5-gallon bucket. So the dirty 5-gallon bucket gets everything that's dirty. It doesn't matter if it's glaze, it doesn't matter if it's clay. Because at this
tools,
point...
Tools, everything. Yeah, you don't have... I'm surprised you only have 2 buckets.
I mean, I have more than that, but 2 that we actually use.
Well, generally, you're painting glaze on, I guess, or doing, like, you're not dipping a ton of glazes in.
Yeah,
Sarah,
but even when
well?
I was dipping... Well, I guess I have 3. Even when I was dipping glazes, we still use that bucket. So, the clean bucket gets clean water. That's it. And so then I will, and then the dirty bucket, obviously it stays right by the door. And so I will throw with water. And then this is what I do. I throw with water. I let it settle. I clean off the top of, I like get, pour off the top of the water into a smaller 1-gallon bucket that I'm going to throw with.
You're
and
letting
then,
it settle like overnight, right?
Yeah, overnight. I will use multiple buckets if I have to. So, multiple single-gallon buckets. If I'm throwing 100 pieces, I'm using 2 buckets. Easy. So, 2 1-gallon buckets of water. I do not care. It rains. So, but the dirty bucket... I pour off the top water into another 1-gallon bucket, and then I put the really sludgy, dirty stuff into
the dirty bucket.
The dirty bucket, or I put it on a plaster and dry it out completely and throw it away. But most of the time, it just goes into the dirty
okay.
bucket. And then,
but the dirty bucket—is there water in there at first, or
no,
there's nothing in there?
There's nothing.
Oh, okay. I pictured you filled it with water. You don't
no,
fill
no, no.
it with water at
it's
all.
It's just, no, it's just empty. And then I will get more water from the clean bucket and then fill the bucket that's already half full with the top water, with mm-hmm. the clean water. And then I just cycle that through. And then with glazing, I will, if I'm dipping glaze, take less water from the clean bucket and then glaze, and then I'll pour it out into the dirty bucket. And then I have
so
to huck
you...
that.
So you're putting that into like a 1-gallon bucket from the clean, and then what are you dumping glaze and cleaning tools in that little bucket?
Yeah, I clean all the tools and stuff in that little bucket, and then I and like everything in that little bucket, and then I'll dirt put it into the big bucket, because after a week and a half, the big bucket gets kind of smelly, and you don't want to put your hands in there.
Oh,
and
I bet. Yeah, you don't want to, and hopefully
gross.
You don't lose a tool in there or something.
Right, and then once it's like a little bit more than half full, I will take it downstairs and dump it in the grass outside. And because
so it's dirty, it's clay, it's glaze material, and
it might be some pop,
just water.
You know, it, like,
there's soda in there.
Maybe it depends. We don't have a drain, so. So I just like,
wow.
Yeah, and then I'll take it outside and dump it. Basically, I didn't want to put it down the sink, and the landlord was like, yeah, you can just dump it, whatever, it's fine. So I find
okay.
the grossest part of the yard and dump it in there. It's awful, and it does not, it's not great, but that's the
yeah.
way we do it.
Yeah, I can see where, like, additional buckets would just add confusion. I mean, if you were dipping glazes, though, and using tools to stir and all that, like, would you add a third bucket so that you can actually, like, because I value putting it down into water and turning the drill on so that it cleans it a lot quicker than using, like, a sponge and wiping and...
I don't wipe anything off.
But how would you get all the shit off of it? How would
I
you
just
get
put
all
it in
of
the other glaze.
A glaze? What?
I, like,
you
put
keep...
it in the glaze. Like, let's say I have a black
You're
glaze,
stirring up
right?
a white.
No,
okay,
you start with white. Start with white. Ching, ching, ching.
And then you
white.
Move it into the black with glaze still on it.
Yeah, and then I move it into another color. The amount of glaze that's on your spinny thingy is not going to matter. But also, you can just ching, ching, ching. You just spin it really fast
yeah,
over the
it.
Bucket, and then it releases onto the bucket, and then you just put it in the next one. Hey, we don't have luxuries of...
No, I... no, I'm saying... Okay.
It doesn't change the colors.
I just don't contaminate any... I don't even open 2 buckets at once.
Oh, I have all my buckets open at once.
I think that will cut down on cleanliness too, like, and cross contaminant. I get it. It's just a drop, or it's like maybe, I don't know, maybe a cup, less than a cup, maybe half a cup of glaze that's contaminating another glaze, but
yeah,
it's minuscule, but I just try not to open more than one bucket and keep it clean. I feel like that keeps it cleaner because you're more conscious of flinging glaze around if you have other buckets open, as well as mixing, like risking mixing things up. I get it. A lot of colors are very obvious. Like, that's a green glaze. That's a blue glaze because of the color. Like,
right. Yeah, I think that, like, I've just been doing it this way for such a long time. Like, when I had another 5-gallon bucket and, like, you know,
students, what did you do in your like other that. Studio? Did you do the same thing in your other studio, your big studio, or did you have no, a rinse?
Just,
did you have
I would
a
just
sink
keep
and
the
rinse?
Drill. And... I would just keep the drill in a 5-gallon bucket of water.
Yeah.
You know. So.
Yeah, so you just clean it off and rinse it, and then just dip, put in your other color, and.
Yeah, but I mean, usually the only time I rinse out the drill is when I'm going from like a dark color to white. So. Okay. I mean, you know me. All my glazes are fucking mystery glazes anyway. It doesn't really matter. But, yeah, as far as, like, sweeping, though, like...
Should you sweep?
Technically, no. Do we sweep?
I do. I mean, the only time I would say yes is to, you know, if you're sweeping up a broken piece or something off the ground. Like, not greenware, but like if you drop some bisqueware or something like that and you're sweeping up a bunch of physical pieces.
I think that the reality of your life versus other people's life, like let's say, I don't know, somebody's using a Giffen grip to trim and that.
How are they clean? But they're sweeping, maybe sweeping, we need to get more specific. Are you sweeping greenware, like trimmings? That is solid, are you sweeping raw materials off the floor?
Like the floor, just the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I typically do sweep the floor, but I try to keep the... Hi, Rachel. I try to keep the windows open and wear a respirator. And we have this cool little moppy, sweepy thingy that's, like, doesn't have bristles. It's, like, a squeegee almost. And we use that in here. But I feel like our floors are really fucking dirty compared to, like, most people's
What kind
floors.
Of surface is that floor?
It's awful. It's, like, I mean, it's great, but it's awful. It's, like, a linoleum tile that's spongy.
Hmm.
I feel like it's never clean. We don't...
I don't know. In that basement studio, I've always had concrete, pretty much. I feel like concrete, I don't know, maybe it looks cleaner when it's, like, mopped, but I feel like I could never clean it to make it look nice.
Yeah.
I feel like the linoleum, you could at least mop it, and it would probably look pretty clean.
Yeah, that's true. Ideally, I should never sweep the floors. I should just mop them. But, like, with not having a sink or a drain of any sort, mopping the floors becomes a real pain in the ass. But an investment in a good mop that's not from the dollar store would be nice.
What about that spin mop thing? You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I used to have one of those. That's the fucking shit.
Because you have one of those, that's what you used in the old studio, right? The big studio?
Yeah, the spin mop, O'Reilly spin mop or whatever, that was so much fun to use, and it was very effective. But I think that the best one was if you have a small studio, my friend had one of the ones that look like a Swiffer mop, but it's got, like, a basin of clean water, and then you put it in, and it cleans it, and it puts it into a basin of dirty water, and then when it comes out, it's clean again.
Hmm.
I don't know if I explained that well enough, but it's like an.
I'm thinking of one where it like scrapes it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It looks like a Swiffer, but you put it in sideways into the water basin. That I feel like worked really, really well. I should buy one of those. Maybe.
Becca's like purchasing now.
I might purchase one now. No, I mean, we haven't cleaned, like, really, really well in a long time. When Merritt moved out, she cleaned that area. But it's just hard to keep this motherfucking place clean, you know? And...
But how much of it? How much of it is controlled by? Like, what? What makes it dirty? Is it clay on the floor? Is it glazed? Is it underglazed? Is it dust? Like, what? What is making it dirty?
I think a lot of it's just dust. You know, that settles.
From clay being in the air and
air and like, because like. I sweep under my wheel a lot. Yes, there's some spots there that have been kind of like, you know, water spilled or something like that. And, but for the most part, it's fairly clean. My wheel's kind of a hot mess. My wheel's probably dirtier than most just because of the splash pan situation. But yeah, I mean, like the floors, I feel like are just fucking dirty. You know, it doesn't matter really what we do. They're just dirty. And admittedly, me and Sarah are not the cleanliest people, you know. And also, we're not here most of the year. So, like, when we come into the studio, like right now, you can kind of see the background. When we come into the studio, it's a fucking hot mess. Like, I've just got shit everywhere right now, and I don't even fucking care. And my desk looks like a goddamn disaster. And, like...
It sounds like you need like a half day before you leave to tidy, come back to a tidy space. Because yeah, I hate like coming home and you've got, you know, 3 loads of laundry to do when you get home and there's dishes in the sink and I'm like,
yeah,
let's at least tackle some of this so that we come back and it feels refreshing and it's I'm happy to be back versus like I've got chores when I get back.
Right, I've always been good at like the house being clean, you know. And, like, cleaning the house on a regular, but the studio's always been a tough one for me. And just, like, I think a lot of the problem is that I don't like dirt. I do not like dirt. Like, that's why I like clean water and, like, stuff. Like, I'm not a dirty person. Like, I don't like my hands to be dirty. And so when I see a bucket that's literally got clay, like, slopped over the side, I don't even want to touch it. I'm like... You know,
why is there clay slopped over its side? Like it was a throwaway piece that didn't get reclaimed, so it just got thrown and it's dried out?
I don't know. Maybe somebody touched it with clay hands. I don't know. But, like, you know, it just makes me want to just throw it away. But, yeah, I mean, you know what the biggest thing for me, I feel like, of keeping, like, a cleanly studio is not... having multiple bags of clay open. That's like the biggest fucking thing, and I'm awful at it. Awful.
I mean, I don't prep any clay, but, you know, Erica does one bag at a time. We, like, you have that half bag of clay that you used in my studio. I'm like, dude, like, where do I need to put it over there so it gets used first to be prepped.
I was hoping that if I set it there, it would be prepped. But
it doesn't get prepped
really
from there. It usually goes underneath the middle table that the clay comes from through the doorway where all the clay is stored, and then it gets prepped on the table in the middle and gets put into bins. I also think that helps too. Like I'm going to say this because I have cats and I have the bins, but like I think they're the best because it's keeping, there's no dust formed inside of a plastic bin. Like,
right.
It's consolidated, it's airtight. You know, if you're opening and closing clay bags, even if you opened a clay bag and threw a bunch of balls in the clay bag, like you're probably gonna have remnants of dry clay in the bag.
Right.
That's gonna attach to your clay balls, and then you're opening and closing and taking out, and like the little bits of clay from that is gonna fall on the floor, and you're gonna pick up a clay bag off of something, and it's gonna be upside down, so the clay's gonna fall out on the floor. Even if you're trying to like throw it away or whatever.
Yeah, you know, it's something that I used to do when I was in Washington that I don't do anymore, that I should have continued to do, but I don't, is I used to put all of my, like, I would weigh out, like, 2 bags of clay, and 2 bags of clay at 1 pound each, or actually just 2 bags of clay fit in a 5-gallon bucket. And so I'd weigh out 2 bags of clay, and they'd go in the 5-gallon bucket, and I'd throw that. you know? And that did keep down, like, yeah, you just, like, have the bag and then you can toss it or you can fold it up and put it somewhere. And it, and when it's, like, brand spanking new, it doesn't have as much dirty, dusty stuff in it. That's helpful.
Yeah, I tend to just pile up these bags. I use them to scoop up the cat litter.
That's
and
fair.
And cat shit. Like, that's what I use the bags for, and we throw them away, but I'm never going to use them enough to have. So I usually just take them to Baker Hunt, or if you know somebody that reclaims clay, like, I don't know, a community studio or something would probably make use of them. I give them to Baker Hunt because they reclaim the clay, and hopefully they're using them to, like, put the new pugged clay in there. I don't have a pug mill, so if I had a pug mill, like, it would be useful for that, but, or I'd probably just put them right into a 5-gallon bucket, into the cat litter buckets, and store them in there. The, like, logs of clay. But I don't even think they use them. I think they use, like, the thin, like, trash bags. I'm like, why are you putting reclaim in trash bags?
Yeah.
But
I don't know. I mean, like, yeah, I think that just having fucking bags all around is the biggest way to have a messy studio. My side of the studio looks like a goddamn bomb went off. And, like, Sarah's side looks better.
Turn your screen. I want to see this.
But Sarah's side looks better mostly because she had an interview the other day, and so she had to make it look nice. This is... Oh, wait. This is what it looks like. Because I literally just took everything out. This is my desk right now. It, like, looks...
It just needs a little tidying. I mean, I'm sure you got tools and stuff that are sitting out that could probably be put in a proper landing spot.
Yeah, I mean, and I just, like, literally, I came into the studio and I threw all of my crap in here and took it all out of my van and put it here, and I've just been working, and I need to take, like, a moment and just clean. I think that's the biggest thing, right? Like, people are like, how do I keep my studio clean? You need to, like, schedule in a fucking date. If you're not a clean person, you need to schedule in...
Prioritize it, yeah.
First of the month, clean in the studio. And, like, no matter what you think, it'll make you be more productive. Taking half a day to clean your studio will make you work better the next week.
Mm-hmm.
10 out of 10.
And some people would say, oh, well, I'm just going to dirty it up the next day. It's like...
No.
So what? I think you'll appreciate it more if it's clean and you know that you're... basically restarting a clock of making it dirty, I think you'll make different choices of how
you
notice that something's clean and you're like, you know, do I wipe my hands on that or do I make sure I clean my hands first before I go and touch this thing?
This is getting me very energized and I feel like tonight's going to be a cleaning night.
Nice.
Yeah.
I mean, my TV remotes look like shit, so, like, somebody reminded me. Somebody was on my post the other day and was, it was the end of a throwing night, and I took a photo above of, like, the pots I threw with the, you know, the speedball bats all over the shelves and the, you know, the mugs and stuff. She's like, I thought you had the cleanest studio, and then I was brought back down or something when I looked at your remotes. She's like, I felt better when I saw your remotes. And I was like, oh, great.
Yeah, those remotes are rough.
So.
Yeah, it's just like, I don't know. We're not really talking about how to keep the studio cleaner, I guess. But the biggest thing for me, I'll say this. Having bins, like having places for things is really important for me. And having spots. And also not having useless shit. Like, I fucking hate the fact that I have these, like, random cups all around me. And these, like, random bowls that potentially don't get used. And so I will make sure,
like, that finished ceramic pieces that are seconds that you didn't do anything with?
Yes!
Like that?
Like, this stupid fucking cup right here that has, like, I don't even know, a test. And I don't know why it's not in the trash. I'm putting it in the trash right now. But, like, and then a spoon, just, like, a random spoon. that's gross. Like, you know, it's just having places for things is really important. That's why I love living in the van and working out of the van, because every single thing has a space. And then coming back to a place like this makes me want to blow my fucking brains out. But,
I mean, your studio, your physical studio space is like three times the size of just your side. It's like three times the size of your van, probably, or, you know, four times the size.
I've always worked much better in a smaller space. And I think that people that have small spaces don't realize the advantage that they have of having a space for every single thing, you know, because then when you move to a larger space, you're like, great. Look at all this space. And then it just all fucking vomits all over everything. And there's like not a space for everything, you know? I think having shelving, having wall hangings, like storage, having bins for certain things is really important. Having like a fucking clean desk is important. Having like not just random fucking shit. I think that's the biggest thing for me, is just collecting all this random stupid pots that maybe go through the firing or maybe don't, and I need it for like one firing or to put stuff on. And I'm like, this is so stupid. I don't need this, you know?
So what do? Do you just throw that stuff away, or do you have to go through a purge and break it so that you don't keep it?
Yeah, I'm going to have to throw it away. I mean, like some of the stuff I haven't used in forever, and it's like, some of it you use while you're trying to figure out your processes and your systems, but now I have my systems. And I think that also the biggest thing for me when keeping like a tidy, clean studio is just not having too much stuff. As potters, we tend to like think that we need all of the tools, and we really don't. You know, you really have to have an objective eye and like be like, have I used this in the past year? No.
How would you go about getting rid of some of that stuff? Would you just, I know you personally would probably just throw it away.
No, I gave away my tools.
You did?
I did give away my tools.
Okay, yeah. I feel like some stuff you just fucking chuck and you're like, I don't need this in my life anymore.
If it's trashed, I'll chuck it. But a lot of the times I'll put it on the free table downstairs. That's the beauty of having like community here. But a lot of times I'll put it on the free table or give it to somebody I know that will use it. And yeah, like I had I just have to like kind of go through things and be like, how do I use this? How do I consolidate this? You know, especially coming from the van, I know that I've used all of this stuff consistently. So that's really all the stuff that I need. So all of this stuff that's like here, I don't necessarily maybe need, you know, I can like go through it and make sure it's got a place, but it doesn't mean that it won't get out of whack, you know?
Yeah. I think if you have the space for something, you're going to find something to go in that space.
Yeah. That's why small spaces are better. Like,
and you're like, you're fighting for every inch of space you have in a small space. So you really are keen on what is important and what's not.
Yeah.
And then that's probably going to lead you to be, you know, more clean generally.
Yeah.
I have some like areas that I tidy up every now and then, but I mean, I had a little purge here and there because I started, you know, I got the soda kiln stuff going and I got to make three new glazes for that. So I got to make sure I have buckets for that. And where do those buckets get stored?
Yeah. Ooh, here's a good question. And this applies to both of us. Where do you put your shipping supplies? That's what I feel like is the most frustrating part about a studio. Is putting the shipping supplies in some place that makes sense is infuriating. It's like, where do you put it? Where do you put it? Where do you put it?
I have none of the shipping supplies in my wet studio. Luckily, I have the benefit of having a storage area adjacent to my glazing and kiln area because it's in my unfinished part of the basement. So all of my shipping supplies are in the unfinished part of the basement, unless it's actively being used. If it's like my peanuts are right here next to my so like the clean nice stuff that's going out to be shipped is in this room near my desk, so I can use my computer if I need to like do an invoice or whatever, and my packing roll is right here on my on my bookcase here, so it's accessible. I have a clean area to pack and ship stuff. It's right by my printer's right over here over my shoulder. So this is basically the office space where all my shipping stuff is. And I just take things out of storage and bring them into the office space, quote unquote office mm-hmm. space, to pack and ship. So, you know, like my small boxes are right here on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
So they have a very specific spot. I mean, I'm not packing and shipping 50, 60 things at a time. So, you know, I just need, you know, maybe 10 of each box accessible so that I don't have to go get it out of storage every so often. I can, you know, I can go get it every 3 or 4 months if I need to and just backfill. And then the peanuts take up a ton of space. So you got to find somewhere to put the peanuts. But
well, explain what you do with your peanuts, because I think that people would benefit from that.
So I have the huge bags, but I don't want to be dumping them out of the big bags. So I keep I don't know how big the totes are. How big are the?
So it looks like a 25-gallon tote.
Yeah, so it's a plastic tote like you would store Halloween decorations or, you know, Christmas decorations in, whatever. Or you'd pack pots in to take to and from shows. So I will fill that up, which is about, I don't know, maybe a sixth of a bag. So, like, I don't need the whole huge bag, and then I'm getting peanuts everywhere, and I have a big chute that I build and have it open and close and stuff. Like, that could be beneficial, but a lot of my boxes are really small. Most of my boxes are 7x7x6 or smaller for the orders I have. So so I'll just scoop out. I'll just use my hands and just pick up the peanuts out of that and just put it into the boxes as I pack each one, or Rachel's packing each one. So that's typically what I use, and then I just refill it.
I like to use a pitcher from the dollar store.
That's a good idea. Yeah.
A gallon pitcher. Yeah,
you can get a good amount in there.
Yeah. So I'll tell you what I do as somebody who doesn't have a home office, and all my packing stuff is here. I have a cart that I got from the, I got it from my neighbor many, many years ago. And I think that you would probably get it at Uline. It's one of those expensive ones that has like the top, and then it also has a bottom. You can see.
So it's actually four. I can't see the oh, it's the one directly behind you. Okay.
Yeah. So it's got like a top. And then it's also got a bottom rack.
It's a rolling cart.
Yeah, it's a rolling cart. It's like a U-line cart. And I also put, that's where I put all of my, that's where I put all of my pots to be finished. I've had it for years. And so I put my wear boards up there, and then I put my pots to be finished, and I use it as a working table. But then on the bottom, what I've found to work best for me is at the bottom, since I have smaller boxes typically, but maybe not as much, I put all of my packing supplies on the bottom of that rolling cart. And so,
and it's like recessed, right? It's got a lip.
Yeah, it's got like
on it. It's not flat.
Yeah, it's got like a 4-inch recession, I think. And so I can fit my 10x10 boxes, my 6x6 boxes, and then all of my envelopes and stuff like that. And I can even fit my paper roller down there. And I just keep it down there because then I can move it to wherever I need to be for packing. If I need extra table space, then I can move it over there, or I can just use the top of it as a table for when I'm packing. And it's mm-hmm. been really helpful. Before, I tried to keep it all stationary, and then it would just be a hot mess. And having it be mobile has been great, and it's like always hidden, quote unquote. Like, it's always in a space that I never used it. So having it to like be there, mm-hmm. and I have my big, big boxes just on the wall here, but having it there has been just really nice.
Yeah. And if you don't have a space, like, luckily my quote unquote office is right next to my studio and right next to the storage area. If you don't have that, at our old house, I had the office on the second floor of the house. My studio was in the basement. And what I typically did was I had all the packing supplies, just like the Rand Pack and the peanuts and everything. I had the exact same setup in the office, and the boxes were in the closet. So we had a walk-in closet in there and a little storage thing under the roof line that I stored a bunch of boxes in. And my peanuts, I had a bag of peanuts that were in there too, that were, you know, piled in the closet. And then I would have the stock that's actually on the website in that room as well. So I just had, you know, a bin on the shelf that I stored all the finished pots on. So, I mean, if you have 200 pieces in a, or I stored it in the closet. I think I had a shelf in the closet that I stored all the finished pots on. So, I mean, if you have 200 pieces, maybe you don't have storage space for it, but it helped me keep the pieces separate. They stayed, you know, away from dust. They weren't building, you know, clay bits and dust everywhere from my other parts of my studio for something I'm going to ship out to a customer. And then same for, you know, the boxes and everything.
Yeah, you know what I was thinking about? Like, if I was in, like, a small studio space and I was shipping a fair amount, like, small as in, like, 10 by 10, 12 by 10 kind of, like, room. Keep in mind, I'm in a very large studio space here. I have 1,000 square feet of space, but I'm in, like, 400 of it. if I was going to be in, like, a really small space, I think that I'd probably get one of those, like a metal rolling shelf and okay, the metal rolling shelf has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 shelves on it, right?
Can you show me what you're talking about? Is it a metal rack that...
Yeah, it's like the ones at the, like, at restaurants.
Oh, okay. Yeah, it's got holes on the, yeah. It's got the silver poles, yeah, like up the four corners, and it's got the little slats, so they...
Yeah, like the NFS shelves that they sell. And I got mine on Amazon for, like, I don't know, $50. And I would make the bottom, I would have two shelves on the bottom. I would have one that's a little bit taller that you can fit a 10 by 10, 6 by 6, 12 by 12 if you need to. Boxes, and you could line those up on the bottom shelf, and then another one that's smaller that's got, like, you can have your, if you have small stuff, you know, your little boxes, whatever. And then I would make the third shelf, I'd put a piece of wood on it and make that a lot different and, like, a different height, and so that I could have it as kind of like a quote-unquote work station. And I would probably put my label printer on the shelf under it. And then that way I could have, like, a surface area to, like, pack things up, have my tape dispenser there. And then you could jerry-rig, like, a little paper dispenser if you needed to. And then you could use the top two shelves for whatever. But that's what I would probably do if I had to do that. Because then you could still move it around, but you could also use the top two shelves for, like, storage of something else, and then it's still, like, your own little station to, like, pack at, and it's confined to that area, so you're not, like, bursting out, you know?
How would you handle the, because you use a lot of corrugated cardboard, or maybe you don't these days, but...
I don't anymore. If you have corrugated cardboard, they need to go up on a wall. I've seen Liz do that.
She's got, like, a strap or something that they go, it goes through the middle and it kind of holds them, and then she kind of pulls them down from.
Yeah. I used to just use a PVC pipe, but, like, Liz Cohen has, she made, like, a really cool little system for hers. So go to her site and look at hers.
Yeah.
If you use corrugated cardboard, but I don't barely use it anymore because I don't pack as much pottery. But, yeah. Also, I'm a huge, 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 huge fan of slat walls in a studio. Huge fan of slat walls. Because you can put...
Is that very common? Like, what? Not the, like, pegboard, but are slat walls pretty common?
No. But they're not.
Or is it just running the metal trim, the little metal area things that you can clip?
Yeah, you can do that, too. That's nice, too. Just something where you can do, like, removable shelving so you can move it as you need it, you know? I don't have slat walls here, but I just put my slat wall holders, like, my shelf holders up and just attach them to the wall. But yeah, the slat walls are great. You can do all the things with them.
Okay. What about, I don't know how much raw materials you use in your studio these days. Do you use that? How do you store it?
I don't have any raw materials, but when I did, I used trash cans and I put them under tables.
Okay. Yeah, generally keeping them as low to the ground is pretty good. I use the, again, big surprise, 5 gallon cat litter buckets. They got the, I mean, these are pretty good when they got the lids that can flip up. And they're like, it's not removing the whole lid. You just flip it up. You scoop out what you need, and then you flip it down, and it's actually sealed and closed.
IKEA has really good containers for that right now.
Oh, really? Are they like a 5 gallon bucket? Like,
yeah, they're like $5. They're like a trash can, but they're good.
Sweet. Okay. Yeah. So that's what I do for my raw materials. I mean, I get a handful of them in 50-pound bags, so, you know, an EPK or whatever, I'll store them in that. I don't really have a good storage after they're still, like, when they're still in the bag. I just kind of roll it up and make sure it's not open. And, you know, roll it up as much as I can and tuck it away.
Yeah.
On the, like, near the ground on top of the other bags of raw materials. But, What about, I don't know what kind, I think I got the same air thing that you got back in the day. What about that? How,
air filter?
Do you all use one of those? Yeah, like an air filter, air cleaning.
You didn't have the same one I had. I had the IQ Air, and they're like really fucking expensive, but they're pretty good.
Okay, I did not have that one. I had a standalone one for, like, 500 square feet or something.
Yeah, the IQ Air is a mic, like, it filters out, like, past HEPA. So, like, 0.03 microns or something like that.
Yeah, mine is the Silver Onyx. And mine says remove HEPA filter 3-in-1 cleaner. Remove 99.97% pet dander, odor, dust. 5-speed. And I generally, we use that. I probably need to get another one for my wet studio. Because right now it's in the, it's by the kiln in the raw materials area, so we pretty much use it when we're waxing and when we're glazing, or raw materials, mixing raw materials and mixing glazes and stuff.
I've heard that if you don't get the, this is all speculation, but I've heard that if you don't get the right kind of filter, that it just makes it worse. It's just like pushing it out into the air.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of, if the dust is settled, don't bother it. and that's why I don't clean under my desk. So.
That's an option. I'm like, yeah, I think, so when I was talking with Danny about it, she has a community studio. It's not a very big studio. It's probably, the studio itself is probably half of the size of just your space.
Yeah.
So it's really small. And what they do is every Monday, they're closed on Mondays, and they clean the studio. So they actually, like, roll the carts out and mop behind it, mop the floors, wipe down all of the counters, clean all, I mean, I think they're commonly cleaning the bats and everything anyways, but, you know, move the wheels out of the way, mop the floors, and wipe down all the surfaces so that, like, every Monday they're starting fresh with a clean studio.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I think, like you said earlier, just prioritizing it and making sure that you're not neglecting it and you're disciplined to, like, do it.
And you set it as a reoccurring reminder. Not just as, like, a thing on the calendar. Set it so it'll remind you on your phone to be like, clean your fucking studio. That's what it should say.
Clean your fucking
studio. Clean your fleckin' studio.
I'm about to get one of these here.
What are you getting?
Another one of these.
And I'm about to get one of those mops. Are we both gonna buy something to clean our studios with?
I'm about to get another one of these air purifiers. I feel like I should check to see if it's actually good enough.
Ooh, though. I found the mop really, really quickly that they were talking about. That's called the one that like wrings out the wet water and blah blah blah. It's called Joy Moop. Joy Moop mop and bucket with wringer set for home. Joy Moop.
Joy Moop.
Joy Moop.
$39. What kind did you say yours was? The IQ?
IQ Air. It's like $700. IQ Air.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, this one's showing it. $900. Hyper HEPA filter. Medical grade. Yeah, the square. A lot of the ones I was looking at, it's a square footage thing. So, like, it can circulate for certain square footages. So, like, if you get a baby one, it's for a tiny, like, it's not really gonna do enough. But depending on the time of year, like, if you can mix glazes and stuff outside, like, it might not be a bad idea to do that. If you're mixing them from raw materials and whatnot.
Yeah, you should do everything outside if you can.
I mean, generally,
20% coupon to this. Add to cart. Buying a mop.
Buying a mop. Mine's sort of like a space thing, because I'm like, how much space is this going to take up in the studio, and where am I going to put this?
Oh, for sure. That filter is so freaking big. My friend has two of them in her house, and it's giant.
Yeah. Okay, before I buy this, I'm going to look. Okay, so the other reference I was going to give you all, I mean, there's multiple references, but the one thing that I was recommended and somebody else got or, you know, told me about was a book from Jeff Zemeck. It's called Safety in the Ceramic Studio.
Ooh, damn.
How to Handle Ceramic Materials Safely. So, it's pretty good. I haven't picked it up in a while. So, actually, before I order this, I'm going to go grab that because I have it in my studio. And have a look at the filtering thing and see if it talks about how many microns the filter needs to get down to. Because, like, one of these say, like, 0.1 microns. Is that small enough, or does it need to be better than that, or, you know.
I just ordered my mop. It's coming tomorrow from 7 a.m. to 11 a.m.
Nice.
Can I tell you something funny that's not related to cleaning at all?
Sure.
Okay. For years, because I've slept in my car for years, when it gets cold outside, I've always been like, God damn it, I want a nose mitten. And shut the front door. They have nose mittens on Amazon, and I bought four of them.
A nose mitten?
Yeah, it's a pack of four, and it looks like a mouse. I'll show you a picture. It looks like a little mouse nose. And...
Oh, and my
it's
gosh.
A little crocheted tip that goes over your nose, and then it goes around your ears.
Sounds like a business idea.
Look at this fucking nose mitten. Oh, I can't. It's so funny.
It's round. I thought it would be a different shape. I thought it would look more like a triangle.
No. It's a little round button.
it's only going to cover, like, your nostrils and the tip of your nose. It's not covering, like, I guess that's the coldest part, but...
Your nose gets so fucking cold. I'll send you a picture. I'll put a picture on the
Instagram. you're going to post a picture when you get this thing.
Of course. I got it today, I think. Very
Are they different
excited.
Colors?
Yeah. I think I got one that was like a red and yellow and black.
Oh my gosh, a nose mitten.
Nose mitten. I'm very excited. Long time coming. We should probably get off because we are like at 2 hours right now. You've got to get to the studio. I've
Yeah.
got to go eat food.
All right,
I'm
last
shaking.
reference. For fluff's sake, they've talked about this topic. I have not listened to the whole episode, but I think I've started it before, so I want to say they're probably going to cover it a little bit differently than we did. And the
Well, we were just
title,
mostly talking about like cleaning solutions.
yeah. So they were theirs is titled "Should I Be Afraid of Silicosis?" We didn't even mention silicosis. I mean, we did at the very beginning, but
Not our place, not our cow, man. Not
should
our
I be
fucking
afraid of
cow.
silicosis? That one's for fluff's sake. It's from 5/18/22 is when that episode came out. They don't have episode numbers, so I can't give you an episode number, but that's the title of it. Yeah, go check that out, see what they have to say. I want to say when I listened to it, they were talking about basically everybody's going to get silicosis to like a minimum, a little bit. So like, it's just how you manage it.
Oh, I for sure am. I like worked in my basement studio for 2 years with dry sanding ceramics with two little tiny windows.
Yeah, it's more about like when you find out that your habits that you've been doing are bad, stop doing them.
Yeah.
And probably get some fresh air. Don't just hole yourself in there and suffer with the dust and dirt everywhere and think you have to keep going into dust and dirt every time.
Right.
Like you can clean it and control it. So
Yep. Get a mop.
I have one of
You're
those
starting to
fancy
get a
mops.
mop.
I have the yellow bucket mop with the top thing that you can you stick the.
I will say that if you have to go with a traditional type mop, get a sponge mop. Don't get a fucking like floopy mop with all the little floopies on it. Like,
That's
get
what
a
I
fucking
have.
sponge mop. Get a sponge mop, man.
Why? Just because it's more accessible?
No, it cleans so much better. It cleans
Oh, okay.
so much better. Yeah, but we have a dollar store mop that Dusty got like 4 years ago,
You
so.
should probably toss that and get another dollar store
Yeah, I'm
mop.
gonna throw it in the trash. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So, yep.
All right. Good luck out there, folks. Stay clean.
Also, another non-related topic, it's drapering season. First draping of the season.
Oh, okay. Do you
Yeah,
have
just.
any in is your did your mom make that one?
Yeah, if anybody wants a drapering, please just contact me. I have some somewhere.
Maybe you should share them on social and people can buy some.
That too.
Just to let people know. So if they did last 2 hours into this and hear this,
Yeah.
drapering, different colors.
Trey Prince. Okay, bye.
Okay, bye everybody. Thanks for listening. Hey everybody, thanks for listening to another episode of Wheel Talk. This podcast is made possible through the contributions of all of our listeners who always ask us great questions, leave us reviews, and contact with us through social media. Thanks to all the fellow makers as well who take time to be interviewed and share about their lives and businesses.
And thank you to Ashley from Boldover Ceramics and Lindy from Lindy Garner Ceramics for their assistance on the Whale Talk podcast Instagram. You are invaluable. Thank you to everybody.